Blog Talk Radio.
Are you ready for more propaganda? Well, you're in the wrong place at the right time. Columbo Chronicles is for critical thinkers. Let's welcome the consumer advocate for justice. Here's the Rose, Rose Columbo.
Hi, everyone. It is the Rose, Rose Columbo, and I am so happy to be here with you every Wednesday from noon to 1 p.m. You are a life source to listen to true stories and stories of human interest, as well as sometimes we have politics and crime and mafia and all kinds of juicy stories. And sometimes it's family-oriented and courage and love and peace in the world. It all just depends on those experts and authors who are from around the globe, mostly America, right here on Columbo Chronicles every week. So you will always be touched by their information, whether it is something that you need self-help, coaching, whether you're looking for human interest, whether you're looking for tips on the law, because I want to remind you that I have brought back the Justice Club as a longtime advocate for justice who has proposed laws in California and nationally, and actually they were implemented over the years. So always interested in what's happening in America, because America's the best country in the world, and we need to push back against evil forces who are coming against good forces. And so join the team of good forces, and let's push back and create and restore the American way of life.
The Justice Club is back on Columbo Chronicles live podcast. Join Rose Columbo at noon and find out what tips she will provide in a world of little justice.
Columbo Chronicles Live. Columbo is on their trail. Listen up at Columbo Chronicles Live.
That's right. Listen up, because today we have a returning guest and very thrilled to have our American novelist, G.L. Gooding, very popular, the author of two compelling books. Actually, he has more books than two, but two that we're going to talk about today. Compelling books with intriguing connections to stories that have warmed the hearts of audiences around the globe. And I'll tell you a little bit more about him in just a moment and right after this important message, because I, too, am an award-winning author who has written a book entitled Obamasaurus. And Obamasaurus is a political satire, and it is an Orwellian fictional adventure story on how the Judeo-Christian dinosaur nation was depopulated, or was it made extinct? And will Professor Noah, who has been chosen by the masters, the anonymous masters behind the curtain, is informed by a mystical sage that he will be taking going on a mission into the remote jungles of Africa, where there is an old wives' tale about Obamasaurus still roaming through that particular area, that the natives fear going into that particular area. And he is to look for an unseen magical cave that holds the tablets left behind with a message for humanity today. But time is of the essence. Will Noah succeed in time to save humanity?
Obamasaurus, the new book by Rose M. Columbo, is an updated version of a political satire that reflects the political roadmap of today's world. Written with an Orwellian twist, will humanity survive or suffer depopulation or extinction? Obamasaurus by Rose M. Columbo, available at Amazon.com.
That's right, and it is not just a book. It is a message for you and for the world.
Columbo Chronicles Live. Columbo is on their trail. Listen up at Columbo Chronicles Live.
So now listen up, because we are going to enter into the wonderful world of authors and experts. And again, if you were just tuned in. We have a popular American novelist, G. Al Gooding, returning on Columbo Chronicles, and his books are very compelling and of human interest. And his reviews have met with glowing reviews by the industry, especially Fresh Snow on Bedford Falls. It's a historical mystery that picks up where the classic film It's a Wonderful Life ends. You might ask him about that, as well as Where Courage Began, and also The Road to Resilience, Thelma Stay 2, Fresh Snow on Bedford Falls 2, and Murder in Minnesota, and a book called Yellum. And so let's just get started, and let's say hello to our very special guest, G. Al Gooding. Hi, G. Al Gooding. How are you doing today?
Well, I'm doing so well, but I'm thinking maybe we should scratch my stuff and let you read excerpts from your book. Now I have my next purchase off Amazon. Is it audible? Is it audibleized?
No, it's not audible, but I'm thinking about that. And also, it is an international award-winning book, so thank you for asking. And it isn't just a book, GL. It's also a message for the world. Critics have said that when readers get to the end, they will be very concerned about our humanity, free will, and our free choice. So it's more of a adventure story, but it has a serious message at the end of the book. And with everything that's going on in the world today, I think people are very concerned. So anyway, GL, more, that's enough about me. How about you? How have you been? I haven't talked to you for quite a while. And so
yeah,
what have you been up to? What have you been up to?
Well, I left California, moved to more Midwestern roots to be closer to family for a variety of reasons, not the least of which I just was having a hard time with a lot of things that I'm touching upon in your book that are going on and kind of getting their genesis, I'm afraid to say, on the West or the East Coast. So I'm in Ohio now in a lovely town called Chagrin Falls, which is charming. The winters are something to get used to again, but I'm glad to be here. Meanwhile, with the pandemic, we moved right in the middle of the pandemic. And with that going on and getting into a new home and remodeling it, my writing suffered some, but I'm back at it hard. And I raised the question about audibleizing your book because, as you know, but your listeners might not remember, I'm visually impaired. So audio books are my choice in terms of getting my literary meal of the day. And so I spent a good part of last year getting two of my books audibleized, and it was a great experience. So if you need any offline input or expertise on the process, I'd be happy to share that with you.
Oh, I really appreciate that. I will get back to you on that because, yes, I am very interested because, you know, GL, a lot of do you want me to call you Gary or GL?
If I can call you Rose, prefer. You can call me Gary. How's that?
Oh, that sounds good, Gary. So, Gary, but his books are under G.L. Gooding, so remember that.
Correct.
And it's Gary. You know, my doctor and my dentist, you know, they told me, they said, oh, my gosh, I'd like to read your book. I just don't have the time. I listen to all Audible. So in the car, you know, or when I'm, you know, resting or taking, you know, a break or whatever. And so, yes, there's millions of people who are in occupations that don't have time to read, but they would like to hear the story. So Audible is, I understand, is very popular as well for our busy lifestyle. So good for you. And I will get back to you on that. And so, Gary, why don't you tell our audience a little bit about your background, because we always have new listeners, and now we're on YouTube, so it's going to expand the audience. And I just want to tell you something exciting that happened this morning. I got a I looked up my my podcast, and one of my podcasts was chosen for a 5-star review by YouTube itself. So I was very excited about that. Very happy.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you.
Great.
So, yeah, it is. I'm very, very happy about that, because this information is so important to so many people, whether it has to do with human interest, like your stories, or courage, or love. People need that hope. Or whether it has to do with other authors who write about crime or mafia or politics or whatever, there's always these stories that touch our hearts, our minds, our souls, and maybe even give us some insight into what's going on in health industry or whatever. So why don't you tell our audience about a little bit about your background and about what you know about your eyesight and what happened. And how it affected your writing?
Well, I'm an old guy. I'm getting older every year. It's funny how that happens. But
well,
I spent
you're
most
getting
of my
older
life...
every year, Gary. Put it that way. Time to go backwards.
Anyway, my most of my life was spent in the corporate world. Did a lot of writing on a casual basis prior to retiring, and because of eyesight issues that were preventing me from doing the traveling and whatnot that was necessary for the job. But it opened the opportunity to do what I really love to do, and that was write. I've spent my whole life doing writing. Creative writing, from plays to poetry to short stories for my children, to my grandkids now, and I always enjoyed the creative process around writing that I couldn't get in the corporate world, because you're really writing within a structure that doesn't lend itself to imagination and fantasy, though one might argue that these days. So when I got out of that rat race, I told my mother that I was finally going to write the book that I'd always said I would write. And I started writing Fresh Snow on Bedford Falls. In the middle of writing Fresh Snow on Bedford Falls, my vision really started going south, to the point that I was declared legally blind, though I do pretty well. There's a big space between really being totally blind and being legally blind, but nonetheless, it made it very difficult as a writer to create and edit works. And thank God I had a good wife who helped out a lot and encouraged. And I came up with Fresh Snow, and I was able to give it to her as a gift on her 100th birthday. It did receive an award. I think you remember us talking about, from the LA, the name escapes me now. As the best historical mystery novel of 2017. And that was really motivational for me to keep writing. And so now I have five works published, hard copy, paperback, and now Audible books, and in the case of two books. And I have two more in the works that have been in the works for some time and kind of went under hiatus, as I mentioned, with the pandemic and the move out here. But now I'm almost done with one of them in draft form, and the other one is it will follow that hopefully before the end of the year. And as I said earlier, because of my vision problems, I've always been an audiobook listener, not only because I can't see that well, but when I'm doing other things, like my wife has me doing the dishes or vacuuming or whatever, I can plug in a book in my ears and the drudgery seems to go away. So there are multiple reasons that I'm a big fan of audiobooks. Not only one other thing that I might mention is I have a library of almost 300 audiobooks that I have, but they fit on my phone. And so,
wow, that's amazing.
So you don't have the issue of now what do I do with this book? You know, the days of having big libraries full of hard copies or paperbacks is on the way out, like 8-track tapes and CD players and you name it, that has suddenly disappeared now from our experience. So that's kind of a real quick thumbnail of where I am at. And I'd love to talk a little more about some of the works that I have done and that are available on Audible at glgooding.com. You can find me and find a lot of interesting stories and blogs and stuff like that.
Well, why don't
I'm sure I
why don't we talk about I don't think we've ever talked about the book Yell'em, and so it's a story about you told about a special father-son that, well, at least it reflects a special father-son connection, and since Father's Day is coming up, can you tell us a little bit about this particular story? It's called Yell'em, Y-E-L-L-U-M, for our audience who don't know how to spell it. So
right.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about it?
Yell'em started as a children's story for my son who was when he was one, I started writing it for him, and I would kind of I wouldn't read it to him so much as just tell a story. And it is a spiritual base. It's a religious based story about a donkey who is orphaned at the beginning of his life and goes through a significant transformation from a hard-hearted, abused animal to one who had come full circle through the help of some of his animal friends and some good humans they ran into, and ultimately is the donkey that carries Mary and into Bethlehem for the birth of Jesus. And I consider it as Indiana Jones meets a Mall in the Night Visitors. I don't know what you would do, but it was intended to be exciting enough to keep the attention of a young boy, and then he continued to grow, so I kept having to modify the story to make it a little bit more suited to his age level. And the irony is that I finally finished and published it when he was 39 years
old. Wow,
so
that's amazing.
It took a long time, but it was a labor of love for sure that I persisted in it. And it is a lot of fun, but it has a message. You said earlier in the introduction about how your book is a story and will hold interest on the basis of the story, but the message in it is what's most important. And except for my mystery book, which even though it was given great feedback as a book, it was a very much a departure from my general interest, which is to write books that are going to have people finish them and be uplifted and feel hopeful and optimistic about what can happen and what should happen and how reliant we are on just not on other people, but how we internally become better through our lives and how we live them.
Yes, I think that's so important. And this book, Yellum, sounds really like something maybe Disney might be interested in, because it's so touching to use animals, I think, you know, to give a message to people and humans. And, you know, so many of us have to come full circle before we grow up.
Yeah.
Face reality. This is really what it's about.
Yeah.
Wow.
Right.
So I really like the theme of that particular book, Yellum. And so,
ironically, we're in the process of putting together a, I don't know what you describe it as. It's a high tech presentation in abbreviated form to present to various producers as a possibility of something to be done with. It's either most likely cartoon, digital, something like that, which would be, but it could be live action too. I don't know, but we are in the process, and within the next month we'll have that. And if you'd like, I'll send it on so you'll see what we're doing with that as a effort to market the idea. Because I agree with you, it's the kind of thing that is a little bit different and is definitely something that would be helpful in these days.
Yes, because, well, you know, he loses his mother. That affects people, affects everybody.
Right.
This orphan beast, you say, of a burden is soon seized by ruthless bandits, which is more excitement to find out what happened there. And then he meets a camel and Rags, the dog, and two kind-hearted creatures who've also been living in harsh lives. And so for the first time, you say, the donkey experiences the power of true friendship and unconditional love. And I really caught that, because people are talking more about true love, unconditional love, because we actually have lost that. Those two words somewhere along the way. You can see in our political arena on television, everybody's bashing everybody. Somebody falls down, they make fun of them, or they're mean. I mean, people fall down all the time at any age. Even when you're a baby, you're falling down all the time.
Yeah.
And so, I think, you know, that you bring that up, unconditional love and true love between your mom and your dad when they met in another book, that I think that's the key to having a good life, basically.
Yeah, there's a lot more to be said for the life you have when you have an open heart, an open mind, and are generous with yourself more than expecting others to be generous with you.
Yeah, I mean, give, and give from the heart, not because you're expecting something back, but give from the heart because that's something you want to do and not have to do. That's the blessing of that, because karma always comes back, whether it's good or bad.
Right.
It's coming.
That's
it may not That's happen
right.
today, but it's coming. And
That's
so,
right.
So, you know, if you want to grab a glass of water or something, go ahead, or a cup of coffee, because I'm going to take a little break, but I want to talk about the road to resilience when we come back. Is that okay with you? We
Absolutely.
Talk about that
particular thing.
Thank you, Rose. All right. You're welcome. Be back in just a moment.
Howdy, folks. Just stopped in by my favorite restaurant, the Horseshoe Cafe. I highly recommend the home-cooked hot meals and piping hot coffee. In fact, It reminds me of my mom's home cooking when I was growing up. The customer service is excellent. Be sure to save room for the world's best desserts. Make sure you try a slice of fresh homemade pie. The Horseshoe Cafe is located at 154 East 4th Street in the heart of Benson, Arizona. The Horseshoe Cafe is right outside of Tombstone, Sierra Vista, and Tucson. Sometimes Patty and Mike stop by to welcome you. The staff at the Horseshoe Cafe looks forward to seeing you. Stop by to eat or relax. Cool down in the desert with a cold beer or your favorite cocktail. That's the Horseshoe Cafe. Oh, and don't tell anyone I told you, but some people think it's haunted. One thing is for sure. Be sure to bring your appetite.
The Justice Club is back on Columbo Chronicles Live Podcast. Join Rose Columbo at noon and find out what tips she will provide in a world of little justice.
Columbo Chronicles Live. Columbo is on their trail. Listen up at Columbo Chronicles Live.
Listen up, because this is the Rose Columbo, right here for you. And we're here for you because you're never alone when you tune into Columbo Chronicles. You know, remember, injustices can happen to you and they can happen to me. And by the way, they have. But together we can make a positive difference. Remember that you are never alone when you tune in to Columbo Chronicles Live and listen to our very special guest. And today on the World of Authors and Experts, we have a very special guest, and it is novelist, American novelist G.L. Gooding, and he's the author of very compelling books that touch your heart, family, and everybody's interest in human interest in the family and how we all survive, whether it's some good or very good or whatever level it's on. Somehow we all make it through it. Hopefully it's good. And whatever it is, we always learn anyway, and we can always help other people when we take it as a lesson and we take that information and make something good out of it so we can be helpful to other people. And that's what it's all about, helping hand to other people, listening to other people. Even if you find it boring, take the be compassionate, be kind, and listen, and maybe you can make them smile. Be lighthearted and try to make people smile when they, you know, are unhappy, especially kids. A lot of kids are unhappy, and we've all been there. And so especially in today's world where it's so complicated and complex with agendas by our government and the medical field and all of these different investors who have us have our heads spinning with all these different immoral, unethical, illegal, unconstitutional, and unlawful agendas. But shut them out of your world and read a good book. And one of the good books you could read is by G.L. Gooding. So let's get back to Gary, and let's find out about his next book, which is very popular as well. It's called About Road to Resilience, and it's on paperback, ebook. And Gary, are you there?
Yes, I am. And appreciate the opportunity to talk about these books because, Yalom, which had a father-son tie, these books are a series of. Road to Resilience is the second in a quartet of books I'm writing about my late mother, who passed away at 102, almost 103, and had a remarkable life. And in the preface of the first book, Where Courage Began, I speak to the fact that I wrote the book not because about my mother, not because she was absolutely unique, but the very fact that she wasn't unique, that she was among a generation that lived through things that I'm afraid to say today's generation would melt and like the witch and the Wizard of Oz and disappear. I can't imagine them coping with the level of challenges that my mother's generation covered in the first book covers the start of her life and her being orphaned, or not orphaned, but losing her father, who was 32 years old when he died, and leaving a widow with four kids under the age of seven to be raised by her, and the story of their survival during the the first 10 years of her life. Road to Resilience talks about her life going beyond that, and includes the introduction of my father, who was a wonderful, fun-loving, stern, traditional father figure that, and I had a great deal of fun taking her stories, as the bones, as the framework, and being able to actually have the joy of writing their story in from my point of view, and having some real fun with it, especially when they first met and how they met, and and she did spend, my mother Velma did spend quite a bit of time when I would be visiting with her toward the end of her life, talking about these kinds of things. My mother was.
Well, I think it's really fantastic that you have written about your parents, but you mentioned that it was back like in the 20s and 30s, which is a very intriguing time to me, to when I see the photos of people back in the 20s and 30s, and then the Great Depression. So this took place, did it, around those particular times that they were young and. And also, yep. You mentioned when they met each other, they instantly fell in love with each other when their eyes met.
Yeah, especially, which was interesting because she was engaged at the time to somebody else. So that added some intrigue. Now, she was born in 1916, right, in the middle of World War One, and went through the Spanish flu cycle and the obviously the Depression, which when I started writing the book, I had no idea that the Depression in the farm community started 10 years before the crash in 1929. They were already in a depressed state from the before 1920, because they'd overextended in land holdings to grow food for the war effort. And when the war ended, all of that demand dropped off, and so many farmers had overextended in terms of leasing or buying land, then they couldn't make the payments. And so foreclosures were coming fast and furious back then. That's the world.
Don't mean to interrupt you, Gary, but that really is a story people should read, because it appears that, I hope not, but it appears that that's what's happening today. And, you mentioned the pandemic, the Spanish flu, and then you mentioned the farmland going under and being sold for a cheap price because the farmers' crops were destroyed. I mean, seriously, that just totally, my brain went boom to today's world. So this is a really important book, because they're talking about food shortages and so forth. So, and the skyrocketing costs. So what happened in that particular time? You're talking about all the foreclosures and so forth.
Well, that meant that all the little communities around the area also suffered, and many of the small towns in the Midwest now are being shuttered because so many farms have been bought up corporately and are no longer small family farms. You have to remember, when my mother was born onto the farm that she was started her life on, they were still plowing with horses. I now live in the Amish country, and I can watch them doing what was being done 100 years ago, and relating to it very specifically. And I think you said earlier, Rose, what goes around comes around. I don't know who that's credited with, but the person who said, if you don't remember and learn from history, you're you're doomed to repeat it. And I think what you're saying speaks to that well.
Yes, and it's amazing that right now I'm talking to you and I'm listening to, and everybody is being reminded about what happened in the past, which seems to be what's happening today. And sometimes you have to remember, you know, I did a lot of research, not to take away from your book here, but I did a lot of research on that pandemic and everything that was going on and wrote a lot of blogs about it. And learned a lot before anybody else even spoke out, even the doctors that all confirmed what I wrote was true. And because I really did a lot of research, Gary. And as it turned out, the people in this, who were said to have died from the Spanish flu actually coincides with what you just said about the farms, because in reality, they died from the lack of clean water, hot water, the lack of fresh ventilation, and ripping those masks off and getting 24/7 oxygen and release of carbon monoxide from their bodies, as God created the breath of life and how it was to work with your nose and your mouth and your lungs, and your cells need oxygen. And they actually died, more of them died from TB, pneumonia, and from most of them, 60%, were impoverished and died from malnutrition because the farms were, like you said, they were not operable anymore. The crops died. There was famine, and 60% of the population was indigent, and most people were actually dying from malnutrition. Mm-hmm. So isn't that interesting?
Yes, it is. And it's when you talk about all of the efforts that were put into the pandemic, for me personally, I did a lot of research on what was going on there. I tracked the CDC's records and did a lot of blog searching and gathering information. And, you know, we went from a period of time we were just talking about where there was no or little to no understanding and little to no services to address those issues, to a time when we had so much governmental oversight and just in a personal observation, overreach that to create a tremendous, I think the biggest residue from the pandemic is the fear that we all live under these days. And, you know, I grew up with where the adage was, the kids should eat a pound of dirt with the food they get because that'll make them healthy. God gave us a body with an immune system that can do an awful lot of things if you don't get in its way. And so it's been a difficult time for the country in so many ways, and unfortunately has tended to pull us apart rather than bring us together.
Yes, so I'm really glad you talked about that in your book, because when people read your book about Road to Resilience, they should be reflecting on what happened then in the past and what is happening today, because you mentioned in your book, you know, that it was the Great Depression and the farms were already going under before 4 years before the crash happened. And then the crash happened on Wall Street and people who had a lot of money lost a lot of money, and around the country. And yet it also, you know, we have that threat today too with the Wall Street gurus telling us about all of that. And so yeah. It is very, very, it's intriguing that you mentioned all that in your book, because, you know, most people aren't invested in Wall Street. Most people are just making it paycheck to paycheck. So your mom was at a time when women didn't really start to go to work until the 90s and out of the house, because everybody was a wife and a white housewife and a mother and stay-at-home moms. And so we didn't need all these daycare centers until this happened. And when divorce got easier, you just had to file and there was no fault. And so, and 6 months later, you're free. but nobody's free in this world, as we know. So your mother had four kids, and she was not able to work. The farms were, you know, not prosperous with crops. And so how did she survive? How did these people survive?
In my grandmother's case, she moved into a small town, and she was an extremely award-winning baker, and, you know, went to county fairs and sold her wares. And she was fortunately taken under the wing of a mercantile operator and a couple there who took sympathy on her with four kids and no place to stay. She was booted off her farm by her husband's father, who actually owned the land and leased it to his son. And it was one of those issues around religion. My grandmother was Protestant and my grandfather was Catholic, and neither family, both families basically abandoned them, disowned them when they got married. And so when he died, it really pushed things into a crisis for Alice and her four little kids. My mother and her older sister at the age of 4 and 5 were already helping in the kitchen to bake goods that would be sold at the mercantile. And then after that, my grandmother took in laundry and cleaned house, some of the houses for the few well-to-do in the neighborhood, and also sewed all the clothes and got a pretty good sewing business going in the little town. And they were able to eke out a meager existence that way for a good for the next 10 years. And then the Depression did hit, and the little town they were in took a harder hit, and they moved to a bigger town in Iowa near Des Moines. And she put her work to good use there. And by that time, my mother and her sister were old enough that they were carrying, you know, doing their own jobs and carrying their own load. They didn't have a lot of time for socialization and recreation.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, everybody was so busy working, and families had to pull together, and kids had to go to work early, I suppose, to try and make some money and pull the family earnings together to survive. But isn't it amazing how strong the American people were and during that time? And because today, when you look at everybody's counting on corporate America to have a job, and then they're threatening to take your job away with artificial intelligence, and they're also threatening to cause a loss of, I don't know how many jobs due to white-collar crime, due to psychopaths and sociopaths and whatever's happening out there. People today probably can't even imagine what your parents went through and your family, and so many of ours of the past, of course. But but this is right from your book, and I, you know, I think everyone should get a copy of About Road to Resilience and actually open their eyes to how strong Americans were and pulled together to survive those difficult and hard times. And look how they bounced back. America bounced back from that. It's amazing, I think, don't you?
Well, I think it is absolutely the greatest part of this country was, we had a country founded on individual freedom, individual responsibility, individual opportunity. And then that generation, I don't think anybody in that time had time to be sorry for themselves, to be anything but to work hard. And we have to remember that this is the early 20th century, and the 1800s weren't that kind to people either. So they're evolving, and we've evolved, and we keep evolving with, and we get a lot of conveniences. We get a lot of things that make our life easier in many ways. But in terms of, it's like an athlete who stops exercising stops doing what they're doing and becoming soft and becoming less able to cope with things that back in the 20s and 30s were commonplace, and people said, I don't have anybody to turn to. I got to rely on myself and my family and my friends. That's why they had big families back then. It was raising your own labor force and providing for your long-term care, because you're going to have a bunch of kids who will, once you become incapable, or will take over and help you to be kind of like the Japanese model, you know, where the older folks are revered and honored. And that's kind of where we were back then. And I'm not sure we're better off now, even though you can, you don't have to remember anything. Your phone will do it for you.
Yeah, I think that's really dangerous personally, because your brain needs to be exercised. Your brain needs to be working constantly, figuring things out for yourself and researching and doing all kinds of things, creating whatever, because that's why God gave us the brain to think. And now they're taking away our thoughts from the children and any adults that fall into that trap. And no longer are kids being taught to write and read and add and subtract and multiply and divide and so forth. Without a calculator, without a computer. And that, to me, is very dangerous, because if the grid goes down, so does their brains and their jobs.
Yep.
Because, you know, you need to survive with that knowledge that everyone else grew up with until recently. What do you think?
Oh, I agree. The lack of children learning critical thinking, rational thought, questioning things to confirm that they're accurate or not, not relying on being lazy and relying on somebody in the media just saying that this is what it is, and accepting it, and even in the face of realities, being unwilling or unable now at this point. You're so I hate to use the word indoctrinated, but so trained in a way of thinking that is counter to what really is necessary now to deal with the world we live in today.
Yes, and I think your book is a good analogy to, or comparison, I should say, to what happened back then and how people lived and how they survived versus today, where people are so worried that they're hoarding food and all this. And in America, we shouldn't even have to be concerned about hoarding food and, you know, in our survival. Other people have ripped off so many people so that they could have, you know, be safe, while ignoring the people they see as bottom feeders, but who really are the people that are working, and the worker bees who do the blue collar jobs. We even have a shortage of blue collar workers now because of all the computer gurus now. And, they're going to lose their jobs too. If the robots, the AI robots, can do all the thinking for us, they'll lose their jobs too. So, you know, it's really kind of a scary situation people should think about. But Gary, about the Road to Resilience, I hope people get that in paperback or ebook. Is that on Audible as well?
It's not on Audible yet. That would be I'm working on finishing the third of the four books. What is on Audible now is Fresh Snow on Bedford Falls. And I am so excited with that. Besides originally being seen as an award-winning work, I was fortunate enough to get the best narrator on Audible. He's the choice for the voice. He's done over 2,700 books. including the Bible, Tale of Two Cities. It can hardly go on to Audible to look for a book without finding something by George Goodell or as the narrator. And I was I've listened to him so many times since I started listening to Audible that I was I doubted greatly that he would deem to read my little book, given all his background and what he'd read, and my mentor Robin reached out to him, and he said, "Well, send me the book." And before we know it, he was on board and excited about doing it. And he has an incredible voice, and it's one of the things that you'll be working on when you do your audiobook, is what kind of voice does it need, gender-wise, age-wise, timbre and tone, all of that. And I had always envisioned if I ever got this book on Audible, it would be with him reading it, and I got my wish. It was a dream come true. And then I have Yalom is also available, narrated by a new person in the narrating business, Katie Swift, who ironically lived in Ohio when we contacted her. And she was the perfect voice for the animals and the tenor of a book about animals and adventure, versus George, who had that. Has this kind of, a fatherly tone in his voice. It just fit the tenor of Fresh Snow perfectly. So I'm very happy with that, and I am looking forward to doing my mother's books, because I think the message in there is important, and if, as I believe, more books are going to be, more people are going to be turning to audiobooks for the reasons we discussed earlier, that it will help in reaching more people.
Well, also, tell our audience a little bit about that wonderful story, Fresh Snow on Bedford Falls, and why you wrote that book,
well,
so they can get a copy.
I started watching Fresh Snow on Bedford It's a Wonderful Life when it first was on television, and it became a staple, and I watched it every year, made my kids watch it with me till they finally snuck out of the room whenever they thought I was pulling it out to play. Anyway, but there were a couple of things in that story that I always focused on. One was how at the end everybody is so upbeat, and it's such a positive moment, except they show a shot of Henry Potter and his assistant sitting forlornly or disappointedly in his office. So, you know, it always struck me as, well, there must be a deeper story around Henry Potter. And so that was one motivation. The other was I'm a Gemini, so part of me is a very realist and the other's a romantic. So yeah, the movie was romantic enough to and I cried every year at the end of it, but a realist side of me said, yeah, but that $8,000 that they replaced with the generosity of the community would not have been the end of the search for the money and who, what happened to it, and the future of the Bailey building and loan would still be in question after the dust settled on that wonderful scene at the end of the movie. So that was the start of the storyline, and it grew from there. I describe it as like a sculptor having a chunk of stone in front of him. You start chiseling away, and you're not quite sure what you're going to find when you finish. And so there were a lot of twists and turns for me as an author, and gave me a lot of interesting directions to go. And, I really enjoyed the finished product, and especially when my mother read it and got back to me, says, "This is a wonderful book, but I don't believe you wrote it." which
well,
was really
amazing.
Kind of a...
that's amazing that you said that, because I just got my latest book in hardcover sent to my home, and I design all my own covers on my book too, except for this next one that's coming up. But I've designed all the covers on the other ones, and my daughter's like, it's amazing. I can't believe you did this, you know. I can't believe you did all this hard work, you know. Your own family can't believe it. And they're the last ones to read the book, I'll tell you that.
Well, I mean, when they've been listening to me talk about doing this for years and, you know, not having anything particularly to say, see, I have capability. I've done this stuff. Now I'm going to write the great American novel. So it was understandable that there was a bit of a surprise, but that's okay. She loved it in the end, and that was a special way of when she was soon to depart, and we had a wonderful relationship and a wonderful life together, and it was nice to write a book about a wonderful life.
Yeah, that's fantastic, and I'm glad you told us that part of the story of why you wrote it, because I don't think anybody else really thought about those points except you. So turned it into a book.
I think that's a root of a lot of good books, is that people come up with things that people haven't thought about whether they're about existing works or whether there's things going on around them. And so that's why I'm going to go on Amazon and find your book and read a little bit more about what it's about. But I'm probably not going to get it until it's audibleized. So there's your motivation.
Okay, and I will be contacting you about that as well. So now is your time to shine, G.L. Gooding, Gary. And you can tell our audience any websites you have, remind them again the names of the books and where they can buy them.
Well, I have a website that provides a lot of stuff, including interviews with my narrators, which I think would be interesting for you or others to listen to, because they're very interesting with their experience in the industry. But I have my website's glgooding.com. And then all the books are at either at Lulu, which is the original place for fresh snow, but I would recommend the simplest is to go to Amazon and look under G.L. Gooding, or the titles of my books in the order of writing: Fresh Snow on Bedford Falls, the story of continuing story of It's a Wonderful Life. Yalom, the animal story about the donkey that carries Mary into Bethlehem. Actually, my third book was the mystery, Murder in Minnesota, the first in a series called The Wandering Woody Mysteries. And then the other two books, the first two in my mother's series called Where Courage Began and Road to Resilience, and soon to come is one called Perseverance. I have another mystery in the works on the mystery series. So,
fantastic.
And two of them are audible, and the others are all paperback or hard copy.
Thank you so much, and thank you for joining Colombo Chronicles today. It was very enjoyable and interesting, and we hope everyone goes out and finds you on Amazon. I'm sure they will after hearing this interview. Al Gooding, G-O-O-D-I-N-G, and find him on Amazon and check out his books. Thank you so much, Gary. It was great talking to you.
It was good to reconnect, Rose, and I wish you all the success with your book and in your life.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. And I'll be contacting you about Audible. Bye-bye.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Have a great day. Bye-bye.
You too. G.L. Gooding has left the building, and Rose Colombo We'll have to leave the building in just a moment, but I want to remind you about Obamasaurus. I also want to, it's political satire. I also want to remind you that there is another book that came out recently, Is America Under Martial Law? I think it'll really raise your awareness to expand your mind and wonder how the government is getting away with open borders, violating our sovereignty, violating our free choice, our free will that is given from God, not by man, and that isn't what we elected them to do by any means, like stop our critical thinking and our thoughts and our control our freedom of speech, which is really crazy. Are you going to let them get away with that, America? And then there's Fight Back Legal Abuse that's coming in the fall, version 2 by Regency Publishers. Fight Back Legal Abuse, version 2, How to Protect Yourself Against Injustices and Legal Abuse, self-help book. First version was published in 2010. It was a global, worldwide, award-winning book in magazines and newspapers and Daily Law Journal. It was everywhere. And so you will be able to grab a copy of that around the fall of 2023. And most recently, just yesterday, I got a copy of my hardcover, Dressing Up and Dressing Down, which is a blast from the past to the present. And it explains how each generation changed in their fashions and why. And it all reflects the economic and the political environment that is going on in America and around the world, and how it challenges the world of the American fashion industry, because we do provide clothing for the world, when we have outsourcing, globalism, China, and we no longer control all of the water, the textiles, and the cotton. So you really want to pick up a book about that before we have to start wearing fig leaves again. Talk about going to the past, going a blast to the past. So anyway, listen to this, and God bless you, and God bless America, and God bless everyone around the world.
Obamasaurus, the new book by Rose M. Colombo, is an updated version of a political satire that reflects the political roadmap of today's world. Written with an Orwellian twist, will humanity survive or suffer depopulation or extinction? Obamasaurus by Rose M. Colombo, available at Amazon.com.
Well, my friends, time flies. And now is the time to say goodbye. Thanks so much for being part of the Colombo Chronicles family. You are appreciated. Please do it now. Bookmark. Push that like, share, and follow button. Oh, and don't forget to comment below and stay in touch. Make your family part of the Colombo family. Until next Wednesday at noon, remember, God loves you, and so does the Rose.